This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar in studio today with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. As always, we're going to recap how markets ended trading on Tuesday.
We are in the green. US markets, Dow was up 0.6%, S&P 500 and Nasdaq also up 0.7%. Crossing over to the Pacific, Asian markets also all up in the green. Nikkei and Shanghai Composite up 0.7%, Hang Seng up 1.5%, STI up 0.7%. As we know, FBM KLCA was closed yesterday, but Monday was up 0.5%.
So to better understand what's moving markets, we have on the line Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst with the Owanda. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for joining us today. Let's start with the U.S. Strong U.S. third quarter corporate earnings have given the S&P and NASDAQ a solid boost. Do you see any positive spillover effects from this into Asian equities?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Asia's been tracking particularly the NASDAQ quite closely this week. The Northern Hemisphere heavyweight exchanges in Asia, Taipei, and then mainland China, Hong Kong, South Korea, Seoul, KOSPI, and the Nikkei have been very closely following the NASDAQ this week. And I expect them to open quite positively this morning on that basis. ASEAN, a bit less so. It's been more of a defensive play for regional investors of late. I think when things get a bit tough in the big Northern Hemisphere heavyweights in Asia, I've been watching some rotation flows move in and out of ASEAN markets as defensive plays. So I still expect our markets to open positively today, but I think that will be expressed more strongly in Japan and South Korea.
Now, Jeff, I know you're a big fan of Bitcoin. And yesterday, the ProShares ETF, the first US Bitcoin exchange traded fund, was launched. So what does this mean for the cryptocurrency industry and investors in general? Because when I'm looking at Bloomberg, it debuted really well. It was up 4.9%. It's now $41.94 and more than 24 million shares change hands. What do you think? The future?
That's what the Bitcoin fashionistas will be saying. Another example of Bitcoin becoming more mainstream, as we say. Look, it's fulfilling a need. And actually, if you're an institutional investor, it does actually make a little bit of sense if you want to have exposure to the crypto space. Now, a lot of these professional or institutional investments and companies are only allowed to have investments on regulated exchanges. And by having the Bitcoin ETF on a regulated exchange, i.e. the New York Stock Exchange, whichever market it's on, pointing towards another regulated product, which is Bitcoin futures, which of course are regulated on their various futures exchanges, that does allow institutional investors to finally have some mandated exposure to that space. I think the key to it will be the liquidity in the ETF and the futures and the underlying futures going forward, and whether we start getting any more complications with the quarterly rolls, that will be interesting to see. But I expect there'll be some teething problems in that respect. But overall, I think it's actually quite a positive move for the crypto industry as a whole. And as I said, it does allow institutions that would previously not have a mandate to be involved in that space to actually start doing so.
So adding more credibility as an investable class. Can I get your perspective on tech shares? Because they are still performing very well, despite the cyclicals gaining strength, you know, as economies reopen. Why are they still the darling of investors around the world with inflation still looming forward?
Well, I think simply it's because of the strong earnings. When you look at the gross margins and the gross profits of these tech, these big tech companies, I mean, the margins are huge. And the other thing is that those margins are fairly inelastic, i.e. it doesn't really matter what's going on in the rest of the world at the time, whether it's in a recession or a boom, those margins hold up. And they also have very strong defensible markets and also market shares, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the Netflix results overnight was another example of that. They've been written off to a certain extent by the mid-year of this year, but they've made a a fairly strong comeback into the end of the year, yet more people are starting to go back to work. So you can't really use the pandemic as an excuse for that outperformance. So, the major tech heavyweights are wonderful companies with very strong market shares and strong profitability. And I think the only real threat to having those in your portfolio is if US interest rates start moving higher. They are more sensitive to US interest rates. And the reason for that is because they have such rich valuations now on these various stock exchanges, which would make them more vulnerable to, say, the US 10-year moving towards 2%.
All right, then. Let's zoom into Indonesia, where you are, Jeff. What did you make of Bank of Indonesia's decision yesterday to hold rates steady? Is that a sign that the economy's recovery is on the right trajectory?
Well, definitely. Jakarta's reopening super quickly. It's almost this whole pandemic never happened. Certainly, the traffic's back. Bank Indonesia are pretty much going to be on hold, I believe, until late into next year. So the good thing about Indonesia is that, unlike other parts of Asia, inflation is very benign here because they've had a real slowdown in the consumer segment. So inflation's still comfortably within their targeted zone. So they don't have any of these problems that such as the Philippines and India. That's a real positive for Indonesia. And the central bank is quite strongly signaling that they're very much in the supporting the economic recovery mode. So with that in mind, and given that the currency has been holding up quite well, there's no real pressure on Bank Indonesia to start unwinding their loose monetary policy. So I think where they've all aligned, basically all of the things have come together and into a pretty good space for Indonesia at the moment.
So is 2022 the year where you should put your money in Indonesia? Because on a year-to-date basis already, the Jakarta Stock Exchange is up 11%. Is there more legs to this market? And specifically, what kind of sectors do you think will be the outperformers?
Well, I think there's still got a few tech IPOs to come, and I would expect we'll see some more on the go-to IPO as we move into the end of this year and into next year. And I think that will be it'll be very well sought after internationally, and I can't see it being anything other than an outstanding success. But when you look at Indonesia, part of its outperformance is its exposure to the commodity segment, to the nickel sector, coal, natural gas. It's actually, with this energy crunch and this commodity crunch going on around the world, Indonesia's in a good place with that, because their primary exports are these things that all these manufacturers around the world need as primary inputs. So for me, I'm looking at consumer staples, stuff that people need to buy every day, despite whatever's going on in the economy, and also in the commodity and energy space. I think those sectors will also outperform into the end of this year and into early next year.
All right, Jeff, thanks as always for your comments. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Uwanda, capping our conversation with a look at Indonesia and just the bright spots in the economy. It looks like it's going on the right trajectory towards post-pandemic recovery.
Indonesia is very interesting because if you see around the region, everyone's revising their projections downwards, whereas Indonesia, I think even the finance minister is holding it. And I think Jeff made two very interesting observations on Indonesia. Well, not very interesting, but obvious ones. The first one is, of course, the consumption part, driven by the proliferation of tech groups, but also mining. Right, the commodity space where Indonesia is really well positioned. I mean, mining counts for 7 to 8% of its overall economy, and it really is the place if you want to get lithium, copper. That's where you go.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's eyeing the close to 300 million population in Indonesia, a rising middle class. So hence this his recommendation to look at consumer staples. And like you say, Philip, commodity and energy space looks very interesting. But I think the other thing to point out is that Indonesia is the hotbed of all these hot IPOs, and there are many more expected in 2022. I think this year we saw Bukalapa, that was the big one that debuted, which unfortunately actually is down 2.13% on a year-to-date basis, 690 rupiah. I think that also because it came to the market with very lofty valuations. But it's not going to deter the likes of all these private equity funds trying to list whatever they've been, keeping and slowly growing and investing, because the appetite or the valuation valuations you can get at this current juncture are still very, very high.
That's right. So we'll be keeping an eye on Indonesia. It's a real turnaround story, considering like just maybe 3-4 months ago, we were talking about how bad the COVID-19 situation was. But now they've really gone on the uptrend. That's definitely something to watch. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.